Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jurgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jurgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts, and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Hi, it's Graham. This is The Big Interview, and today we welcome our second ever World Cup winner onto this series. Osvaldo Ardiles, Ozzy the Great, as I like to call him, was our first, and Rainer Bonhof is our guest this time. And Rainer picked up the famous trophy in 1974, that famous trophy in its very first inauguration, with West Germany, 4 years before our legendary Argentinian friend. Bonhof, if you only know the name and you're not lucky enough to have seen him play, was an absolutely beautiful midfielder who made his international breakthrough at the 74 World Cup and became West Germany's youngest world champion at the time, scoring against Sweden mid-tournament in a crucial match, but then assisting both the winner in the semi-final and Gert Müller's 2-1 goal in the final against Johan Cruyff's Netherlands. We're going to hear the story of that tournament, but also tales about big personalities from that team and the absolutely great Borussia Mönchengladbach side of the 70s that he was part of, including Bertie Vogts, Gunter Netzer and more. A side I first heard of when they came to Pittodrie to play Aberdeen in the UEFA Cup. Across two ties, I think Aberdeen scored 5 times against Borussia Mönchengladbach and went out. How about that? If that 70s spell when Borussia Mönchengladbach were nearly as dominant, nearly as ferocious, nearly as good to watch as Bayern Munich ever were, if that was your era, you're going to absolutely love this interview. If it's not, if you weren't born at the time, you'll still adore it, because Bonhof speaks brilliantly, passionately, with wit as well. He'll make you smile, and you'll learn a lot about world football history along the way. This is a special guest. This was a tremendously fun guest. Thanks to Martin Gregg for putting the two of us together. So, in summary, I think I've made my point. This is The Big Interview. I'm Graham Hunter, and I'm speaking to Rainer Bonhof. Big Interview fans, we have a special treat for you today because we have spoken to one or two World Cup winners before, but never to a German World Cup winner. We today are speaking to one of the truly great right-footed players of the 1970s and 80s, Rainer Bonhof, who today is in a senior executive position at the club he loves, Borussia Mönchengladbach. But back when I was growing up watching football,
Reiner was one of the most exciting, dynamic footballers in a Borussia Mönchengladbach side that was one of the best in the whole of Europe. I don't know, Reiner, whether to say Guten Morgen, Tschüss, or sehr vielen Dank für mit uns sprechen.
Seems that you have lived a long time in Germany, because the stupid words you get already. So you have to come across and I teach you more.
Unmöglich. Then thank you. You're a kind and generous man. Reiner, when I grew up watching you, I grew up feeling that German club teams and the Mannschaft almost literally could not be beaten. Before we begin to speak about some of the things that made your Borussia Mönchengladbach great, try to sum up for me what it is about in the football personality of German coaches, German players, German fans, that, never mind now so much, but certainly in the 70s and 80s, meant that however a season was going, however a competition was going, however a match was going, you all seem to have this elite mentality about we are never beaten. How did that happen? What does it come from?
Yeah, that is a very complicated question. The point in my understanding in that time, means I became professional football player in 1970 in Borussia Mönchengladbach, which is still my love. There was a couple of players. They had a spirit for no losing. That means they couldn't accept a loss. So, and I grew up in this mentality. So we had at this time, if you say that comparing to today, we had just 17 players in the squad. Yeah, so, and all the team, including the two managers, they went always in training facilities. They went, they spent the whole week together. So we know each other far better, and we know each other what happens in the families and so. And we had more and more a friendship in between everybody. And that supported the winning mentality a lot. So, and that is maybe one of the keys. Overall, maybe there was a very tough and father-like manager like Hannes Weisweiler at this time. And he asked every day as much as possible you can do in the training sessions. And later on, he catched you and hugged you and said, you are my best. You know, this in between makes you feel I have to do the things far better than anybody else, just to give him something back for that, what he spent for you.
Was there, and please tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm talking rubbish, but around 1970, as you come to the first time I see you play, which is against my beloved team, Aberdeen at Pittodrie, across two crazy ties in what is now the Europa League. In German society, when at Borussia Mönchengladbach you were tight, you were friendly, Hennes was a coach who demanded a lot. Was there also, I genuinely want to know, was there a feeling of rebuilding, of energy, of achievement? Or not? Am I imagining that? But it feels, when I looked at West Germany from Scotland in the 70s, it did feel that there was a dynamism, that there was a societal push, and that you were part of that.
Yeah, there was suddenly something in the back which gave us the mentality to win. So I remember me, for example, we had a great match in Ibrox versus Rangers with Borussia. There was a battle, and in between Scottish teams and German teams, there was always a rivalry. And so we made an absolute brilliant performance in Ibrox, and we went home with a win in the pocket. So and that was that what was implanted of the manager in everybody of the team to say, hey, first of all, you have to do the things proper, but don't think in losing, think in winning. So, and today, or comparing to today, sometimes there's somebody, opponent, you would say, he's unbeatable for us. So, but we was teached no thinking in losing. We was teached in winning. And maybe that was a percentage in our heart, in our mind, that makes us, for the other ones, unbeatable. So we had absolutely brilliant performances with Borussia Mönchengladbach in the 70s. So Real Madrid, Inter Milan, Rangers, I don't know, so many more matches. We just won about the mentality we got.
Rainer, I'll read you out, if it's okay, the team, the 11 men that played at Pitodri in September 1972 against the team I love, the club I love. In goal there was Wolfgang Kleff, then Bertie Botz, Schmel Rosenthal, Heinz Michalik, Herbert Wimmer, Gunter Netzer, Christian Kulik, Rainer Bonhoff, Bernd Rupp, Henning Jensen, Jupp Heynckes, and the manager was Hennes Weisweiler. How privileged were you, that was 2 years into your professional career, to come into a team with Kleff and Netzer and Jensen and Jupp Heynckes, but maybe particularly Bertie Vogts? Let's stop and talk about two or three of the guys in your team, because they stretch over several years. It isn't just in 1972. Can we start with Bertie Vogts? On the 50th anniversary of UEFA, I stood, had a big interview with Johan Cruyff, maybe an hour. This was in 2004. And I said to him a simple question right now. I said, who was your most difficult opponent? Bertie Vogts. I said, why? He said, because you beat him once, you beat him twice, and there he is at your ankles again, tearing away. Describe your friend and the guy you often played in front of, Bertie Vogts, in that era.
Yeah, this is something special, because we shared the rooms together 8 years. So that means I know far more that I would like to present you now, you know. And it's a little bit difficult, so I have to think about. No, Bertie Vogts, for example, was, or is still, one of my friends. So that means at this time he was more or less obliged to pick up a youngster on his hand, because he was already taken of the manager, the mentality of winning. So the manager, he maybe saw in my person a future man who can make the same mentality as the other did or got. And that was the point that we start to be friends, not even for a match. So we spent also days and holidays together. We went out for dinner. We went to his grandma, two friends of mine. So, we drove the same cars more or less. You know, that was funny. But Bertie Vogts was just a man who was the main voice of the manager, Hennes Weisweiler, including Günter Netzer in the first 3 years. Then Günter went to Real Madrid, but the key for Borussia Mönchengladbach was, of course, an undoubtable Bertie Vogts, because he presented in the field every day in the training matches. The mentality of that was, he was implanted by Hennes Weisweiler seven years ago, before. So, and that was he trained like he played. So, and that was that what makes him special for, like, a footballer, and also what makes big stars in the 70s, like Cruyff or Beckenbauer, Gerd Müller, or wherever he played against, they hated him. So, and that was good for us, because when we went somewhere in Europe, and they saw the lineups, and Bertie Vogts was mentioned in the lineup, so they hated already Borussia Mönchengladbach because Bertie Vogts was there.
Rainer, describe why, because you played with him, you know him, he's your friend. I grew up watching him, but many people who listen to us, maybe they never saw him play. From a football man, as you are, describe Bertie Vogts the footballer, and why did opponents hate him?
No, the Bertie was very tough against himself. He was defender, to describe the person Bertie Vogts or the footballer Bertie Vogts. He was a defender with a huge heart for winning. And overall, he trained as he played. So, and by the way, he was getting a very, very good technique. There was, sometimes they said he was just a nickname was here in Germany, Terrier. You know, the dog, which is always fighting on the street and so, and biting the opponents. So, and that was his nickname. But he was a huge-hearted human with absolutely brilliant skills for the position he used to have in Borussia Mönchengladbach. And then, as a person, he was an absolutely brilliant human for the team, for the club, for himself, and for me as friend. So, and that was Bertie Vogts. And when he entered the park, everybody was shouting his name, and there was he was laughed in Borussia Mönchengladbach.
We have lots of people, Rainer, who've supported us from the beginning of our 6 years doing this. We call them socios. It's like members. And one of them is a guy called Peter Gordon. And Peter Gordon has sent you this question. And Peter loves... we've got two great questions for you, I promise. Peter says, when Günter Netzer burst onto the German scene, he was a standout footballer, a flair player, a player that many people thought was not typically German because he invented, he wasn't necessarily so organised. Peter wants you to tell us how do you evaluate Günter Netzer? Because Peter says, I loved watching him because he brought electricity to the game every time he got on the ball.
I couldn't better explain as Peter did. So Günter Netzer is even today my friend, even he lives in Switzerland and I here in Mönchengladbach. But Günter is also one of this decade players which was playing with a huge heart for Borussia Mönchengladbach, but he was far in advance living. So he had long hair, which was okay. We drove, as I said, a Ford or a Vauxhall or whatever, and he came across with a Ferrari. So it was far away from everything, you know. And his standard was also that he mentioned once to the manager Weisweiler, hey, chef, before you notice us from the press, but I will open tomorrow a discotheque. So, and that like a footballer. So he was away from everything, but he was on the pitch. He was the brain of the team. So, and that was what he said first to me. Rainer, just in the early beginning, when I became profi by Borussia Mönchengladbach, he said then, if you not know what to do with the ball, give it to me. So, and that was Günter Netzer. So he was always able to handle the situation. He was quick. He was left, right-footed. He was the king of the free kicks. He was the king of deliveries. And to be honest, he was special, but he was a huge-hearted and still is a huge-hearted man or human, which everybody in the world would like to have him like a friend.
Rainer, because we're so new to each other, although I adore you, I always have done, I can't say yet that we're friends. So I feel really bad that I have to argue with you. You just called Günter Netzer king of the free kicks. Anybody who saw you play knows that, in all honesty, there has to be two crowns at least. Because taking free kicks, I don't know if that was something that you were good at before you became a profi in 1970, whether it developed with full-time training, but you're not only... how cleverly, how well you hit the ball, but how cleverly. There's one famous goal against Hamburg where you line up to take the ball from your right foot as if you'll curl it this way, and you hit the outside of your boot and you put it into the keeper's right-hand corner. But there's so many times your free kicks are, I mean, truly special.
Yeah, to be honest, there was 3 years for me as a teacher was Günter Netze, because he showed in the training session, even in the matches, how to handle a ball if you have a free kick or you have a corner kick or good delivery. So, and that makes things like me, who was keen to learn everything and to pick up everything, what makes you better, what makes you feel better, what makes your performance, your skills better. So I took everything what Günter did. So, for example, he did that what I did later on as well. So he's, after the training, he stayed on the pitch. He tried corner kicks. He tried, free kicks. He asked colleagues to stay there to build a wall. And all these things makes me picking up the same. And I did it then later on as he went to Madrid. So Weisweiler was looking to get a new man for free kicks and for the set pieces. So, and that was, for me, an idea to say to Weisweiler, hey, let me try it. But I did it on a different way. I did it with my power I have. And so on the far way, my colleagues, they had to understand my delivery is a little bit different as Günter did. Günter was chipping the ball very often, and I was chipping the ball, but with speed. So, and that was, it needs a little bit more concentration for the strikers to pick up my deliveries. So, but however, that was then also for me an idea to say to the manager, Weisweiler, let me try it with the corner kicks, let me try it with the free kicks, and. So, and then later on, do you remember my free kicks? It was a little bit different than the free kicks of Günter Netze.
What did you practice, the two of you? Because detail is important to us. Which types of things did those extra training sessions help you change? Where you put your left foot, which part of your right foot you use to strike? To give us some details.
All these things. If you see a billiard player who knows exactly where to have the give the ball the effect. So, and that was my idea. To look how I stand to the ball, which part of my right foot hits the ball, which effect could I get the ball in several positions. So the upper body a little bit in the back, upper body a little bit above the ball, and all these things that was needed to find out for myself, because you have always in the matches a wall of five, a wall of four, a wall of three. You see the goalkeeper or you see him not, because so many people in the wall, or you have a space on the left-hand side of the wall on the first post and all these things. So, and that was my idea to understand how the ball reacts, how I when I hit him on this side, when I hit him on this side, and how can I control the gap the opponents gave me in the free kick. So maybe do you remember the free kick in an international match against former Czechoslovakia? So I hit him in the angle because the wall was too far left-hand side. So I had so many spaces. And that is that what you have to try in training sessions, how much effect I have to give the ball to turn it to the right or with a outside of your feet to give him the effect to go on the left hand side in the goal. All these things that was for me important to know, and then to pick up the best idea in the free kick situation.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Conor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Tell us a little bit about the actual ball.
Yeah, there was rubbish. Today there's plastic. And we had 1 kilo on our feet, you know. The people of today, they don't know what we had to do or what we did in the past, because there was no underneath heating. We played rain, snow, just using another ball. The balls was full leather balls. When it was rain, there was 1 kilo heavy, the ball. So today, it's always the same. But that makes things, of course, also a little bit different for the players, that you have an understanding. If you remember the match we played in the World Cup 74, when the rain, the heavy rain came with a Polish team. And then we mentioned just in the dressing room, we said each other, so we have to play not on the floor, we have to play half level, you know. So, and then we performed a very, very good match, because the Polish men, they just was passing on the floor and the ball stopped every time, and we got then the ball for making a break. But that was the understanding. We played in grounds which was heavy, which was in the summertime brilliant, in the wintertime full of snow, with red balls, with green balls, whatever. But we was a little bit, the variety of our style to play was a little bit different to today, because the circumstances at this time, today the circumstances in the stadium are always the same, winter like summer. Just the same as a little bit colder or warmer. That's it.
How many free kicks would you score if you were playing today?
Oh, I don't know. Of course, there's suddenly an idea. If you see the full leather size shoes we used to have, and today the shoes, they have just 90 grams each of them, and the ball is the same weight, but full plastic. So that means the fly curve of the ball is different than in the past. So, of course, I would train it as well. And maybe I had a success as well. It can happen, so maybe.
You're very modest. You're very modest. I'm glad you mentioned the 1974 World Cup. There are a couple of things that I'd like you to explain to us. The first is more social, because your big breakthrough was against Sweden. Then, of course, you, as you say, you play Poland in what is effectively a semi-final, and you win the World Cup against Holland. You're a relatively young footballer. The World Cup is being held in Germany. The feeling, even though you're in a training camp, the feeling of the stress, the defeat to East Germany, the pressure on you, the potential joy for winning it if you can do it, In those weeks leading up to the Olympic Stadium in Munich, try and describe the feeling that was going on around you, your family, your friends, the country, and if you had to try and push that feeling away.
Yeah. Yeah, this feeling I picked up far later after the World Cup, because there was no communication possible in between the families at home. You had just one free call. There was no mobiles, it was no satellite, and so there was just seven press people and two teams of TV stations every day with us. But I had then the possibility to have 15 minutes talk with my girlfriend at this time. Now it's my wife, of course, but it was my girlfriend of this time in the evening. So, and then you have to arrange on the same phone for the next day, the same hour, you know. And then there was kings in the squad, like Beckenbauer, they phoned longer, and then you missed the telephone for 10 minutes or like this. And then she was gone, or she went out with friends, you know. There was very complicated at this time, but it was also complicated to be part of the team, because the World Cup team of 74, they was already made in 72 when they won the European Championship. So there was nine players that was fixed, and there was two more players that had to fight for it. So, and then the former international manager, Mr. Schön, he was the same type like Hannes Weisweiler. He was also fulfilled from winning mentality, but also a familiar man. So he liked to have everything around him runs well, you know, without big or huge problems. So, and that was happens a long, long time in the World Cup. So we had the first two wins or three wins, two wins versus Chile in the first match, and then the win against Australia in the group stage. And then it became the match of the former DDR. You have to know that Mr. Schön was born in the DDR, and he grew up in Dresden as well. So it was a big, big blame and shame for him to lose against his former teammates, you know. So from the outside, he became some pressure. I would say today, saying pressure, but the critics, there was on the papers, there was in the news and all these things. And then he started to rebuild a group of four or five new players in the team to make things change and show the people as well, hey, there's somebody, he wants to change something. So, and in these five people who became in the second group stage, at this time the World Cup was not playing in shootout matches. There was two groups, and so we picked up the European group with Sweden, Yugoslavia, and Poland. So in the DDR, they got the Brazil, Argentina, and Netherlands. So that was the toughest group to play with. So, and we know each other. We had friendly before the match for the World Cup against the three other group opponents. So, but by the way, it was then the time to introduce the new players. They have the chance to play versus Yugoslavia. That was the first match in the second group stage. So, and that is a funny thing. We was already 4-5 weeks in concentration in the training camp. And then the day before the match, it was Tuesday, and Mr. Schön came to me after the training and said, Rainer, what do you think? Are you able to play tomorrow in the match against Yugoslavia? And I said, Mr. Schön, look, I'm 5 weeks here, and I'm still here to play football, you know. And now you're asking me, are you able to play tomorrow? So he was laughing, and then he said to me, you will play tomorrow. So, and then I had then the chance by telephone to phone up my parents at home and tell them, hey, tomorrow in the World Cup, I have the first match, and I try my very best to be then also the next four matches. We spoke in the team as well that we want to have the World Cup. So that was unbelievable for us, and everybody was focused to reach this target. So then I played versus Yugoslavia, and then, as you said, my first World Cup goal versus Sweden, the billiard goal hitting two posts and went in. That was the funny thing in the World Cup, and this group, I'm still very close friend with the Bernd Kuhlmann, who fulfilled my position in the first four matches. Very close. I played later on with him in Cologne, and we shared the room together in the training camps. So that means there are still friendships in between this group. So even one of them living in the Arabs, the other one is living in south of Africa. So, but always you got the numbers, and you have not in regulation contact, but once in a while you have to under contact. So, and that makes things so great.
It explains a little bit about the feeling, the unity that brought you through to win the tournament. I know how beautiful it must have felt to get your first goal in the rain against Hellstrom, a great keeper for Sweden. The joy, fantastic. Also, the billiard goal, you mean, is that it hits both posts. So until it goes in, your heart is like this.
I was on the right side of the field. There was a combination, and then the delivery came in. I'm thinking Uli Hoeneß made the delivery. I don't know. Exactly, after such a long period. And then Gerd Müller, he dropped the ball off his chest, and I came from behind and just hit the ball. So, and then there was a wet ground, and the ball was fast. And then he went to the left post and then to the right post. And you can see in the slow-mo that the goalkeeper was watching there, and then he was watching there, and the goal was in. So, and at this moment, you see that if you see the matches, I don't know, you can see it on YouTube or whatever. I lifted my right hand to celebrate the goal, and you see the proud in my eyes. I made it, you know. So that is a special moment for everybody. Making a World Cup, making the first match in the World Cup, and then hitting the goal, or was the second match, but then hitting the goal, and which was an important goal. It was a 2-1 for the later winner against Sweden. But so that makes you then proud, and you have then in your mind the manager will use you as well in the next match. So, and then it was clear that Rainer Bonhoff was playing the next matches.
I really liked the day of the final. I was sitting at home in Aberdeen watching, and I was maybe, I don't know, 11 years old. And I remember when I really was taken by Johan Cruyff. Today, he's still my number one idol in the whole of football for every reason. Cruyff is kind of the leader of a football which I've never seen before in my life then. He makes his run across the pitch, and Bertie makes the penalty. And I remember I turned to my parents who were watching with me, and I was like, even great teams don't come back from being 1-0 down so early, so much I knew about football. The penalty equalises things, but before halftime, the killer blow comes, and the Dutch say that they were foolish in their approach to the game. They now talk about, because it's Germany, they want to play a great game and show off, and they think they lost some focus. But I love the goal in that it builds right from the back for Germany, the 2-1 goal, the Gerd Müller goal. It builds from the back. And when the ball comes, I think it's probably Uli Hoeneß that gives it to Jürgen Grabowski again. Grabowski is the winger, theoretically, but he's so deep. He's so deep. And you make this run. You make this run. You explode like a rocket. And it's a beautiful run. It's the kind of run that Guardiola likes to see his inside fullbacks or his right halves make now. And you disappear into the right wing channel, and Grabowski gives you the ball. How much do you remember of the moment or the daring or the thought process? Because You were playing as if it was minute 28, not minute 43. Halftime is coming. You can choose to play safe, but no. Up, advance, aggression, ambition.
Yeah, to explain this situation, we have to start in the early beginning of the match because, as I said, the Dutch, they had the early penalty. So the other kind was that they started after the penalty demonstrate football. With a distance from today, I would say at this time, the Dutch was the best team in the World Cup, playing football at a extraordinary level. That was like this. So, and the other point is, in my understanding and my feeling after all these years, when they was after the penalty showing us the capacity they had in playing football, in passing, one touch, two touch, and that that is not good for a German team. That they the opponents give you a lesson that is not really good for the German mentality. So, and then we started watching each other, and I said at this time to Wolfgang Overath, "Hey, that is impossible. We have to fight now. That is not Germany. So we have to go and fight them down." So, and then it became this situation when Grabowski was in trouble on the right side, and I saw he was only got an option to give the pass in the white wing area, and there was nobody except Kroll. And I went in and I said, whatever happens, but Grabowski is in trouble, he had only this chance to pass along the line and give me the ball. So, and then Kroll came in and I made my stupid trick. And
No, not stupid trick. Stop there, Reiner, stop. Did you know you were in the penalty area? Because you look as if you know that he can't tackle you, but you make him look like a statue.
No, the point was I saw two German dresses in the box in front of the goal. And later on, I saw that was Gerd Müller, and the other one was Uli Hoeneß. He was a little bit behind him. So, and I was just focused on bring the ball to the two shirts. Yeah. So, and then I make my trick, and then pass the ball inside, and I had to pass him very, very fast because there was Schubia or somebody else was in the middle. He could, if I not passed the ball as fast as I did, so he could cross and pick up the ball. So, and even Gerd Müller was the only person able to catch this ball in the second chance and made the goal. So, and that was funny, but it was for me, part of the goal was today you would say assist. I have made the other assist as well for Gerd Müller's goal in the match against Poland. That was my chance to make the World Cup in 74 to my World Cup. So, and that was happens as well that the crowd in the stadium, they had banners with we know Bonhof, who's Cruyff, and all these things, you know.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.